Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. It remains one of the most glorious sights I've ever seen. A couple of winters back, I was walking with my daughter and our dog in the woods, and suddenly, from high up in the bare branched trees, we heard a low but loud hooting sound break the silence. Once, twice, the sound reached our ears, and then just in the nick of time, we caught the image of a snowy owl bursting from the trees with a great wide flap of its wings before it took off into the blue winter sky. It was a sighting we were able to witness only by luck, right place, right time. But for wildlife enthusiasts who don't want to depend on serendipity to view the wonders of nature, there are skills for tracking such creatures, and even if you don't see the actual animal, being able to identify its tracks and understand what it's doing can foster a greater sense of understanding and enjoyment for the winter wilderness. And here to tell us about the joys of winter tracking is Allie Thomas, Education Manager for the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. Allie, thank you so much for taking the time to come in from the cold and be with us here today in the studio.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Allie, just to be clear, because when I hear the word tracking in relation to wildlife, I automatically think of hunting. But what we're talking about here with winter tracking, this is for the purposes of seeing an animal or just identifying its tracks, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, tracking isn't just about the footprints. It's a sign that they leave behind, whether it's scrapes or scat, you know, browse marks. It's lots of different things. But in the wintertime, it becomes very prevalent. You know, there's snow all over and they leave beautiful sets of tracks behind, and that, you know, it makes it really obvious, and so you can go follow those tracks.
I'm a big fan of the Blue Planet series on television, you know, other nature shows of that ilk. The images they bring back from far-flung places are amazing, and you get to see them in slow motion and all that, but there's nothing quite like seeing an animal or even its tracks in its, you know, natural environment. Do you have to go to the most remote areas of the state to see this kind of wildlife?
No, you know, that's one of the things I love about tracking, especially in the winter, is it's so accessible. Whether you live in Burlington or you live in a rural area of Vermont, you can find tracks anywhere, whether they be little mouse tracks or, you know, maybe a moose. It's all cool. It's all exciting, you know, that you get to follow those wherever they go. Hopefully the mice don't go into your home. But, it's accessible anywhere, which is neat. It certainly, for me, reminds me the importance of wild habitat, because that's when you start to see a lot of diversity of species. Whether you can identify them or not, you know they're different, and that's really exciting. And so certainly getting out to a rural area where there's maybe some land that you can go adventure on is important, I think, but it doesn't mean you have to get out there. There's little tracts of woods all over that has quite a diversity in urban areas too.
I would imagine that most of us sort of miss these signs as we're walking along. You know, I walk my dog in the woods all the time, and I'm probably passing a whole bunch of tracks that I just have no idea what I'm missing.
Yeah, I think a lot of things in natural resources are like that. You know, before you can identify trees, they all kind of look like trees.
Right.
Or before you learn bird songs, they're all just kind of loud birds. And then all of a sudden, you start to learn patterns and shapes, and you can categorize them. And then all of a sudden, because you can put a name to that, you see them. And so it's like that for me, with anything outdoors, is once I can get a name to it, even if it's a group and not a specific species, I start to see it all over. And it's like your eyes open up to something that you've been missing for a really long time.
You work, of course, for the Fish and Wildlife Department here in Vermont. But I wonder if this is something that's been a passion of yours for a long time, maybe even when you were a kid.
Yeah. I've been a runner for a long time. So I've spent a lot of time on trails growing up, running through the woods. And I've also been a wanderer for a long time. I've never been a big, like, I'm going to hike this summit and make a big list of all the hikes that I've gone on. Not that that's not great and wonderful to do.
Sure.
It's never been my thing. I've always just liked to kind of keep slow in the woods. And I think that was really conducive to checking out, you know, what little tracks I was finding. So certainly a personal passion. But it was fostered a lot more when I started to really focus on natural resources as a career.
I kind of love that phrase, be slow in the woods. You know, it's a way to just absorb our surroundings and really appreciate them for what they are. You can really enjoy this activity even if you don't see an actual animal?
Yeah, you can. And, you know, I always say it's like essential for wildlife educators to be able to really see these signs because unfortunately there's not like a button where there's roll call when you go into the woods and all the wild species come and identify themselves. So, you know, right. If you want to have any success as a wildlife educator or just someone trying to interpret the landscape, it's really essential to be able to notice those things because wildlife are elusive. They're tricky. It's really special when you can follow a track and find a live animal, you know, or maybe not a live animal, but at least see the real thing. But it's not common at all. And so that's really, I think, part of the fun is just unraveling stories and following tracks, whether or not you're ever going to see that animal in real life.
How do people educate themselves to identify different tracks?
Well, you know, there are a ton of books out there about wildlife tracking, and there are lots of apps for people who like the technology side of things. But time. That's, you know, time. With anything yeah. with wildlife, more than any other outdoor recreation, I think time or patience and time is what it boils down to, whether you're a photographer, a hunter, an angler, or a wildlife tracker. Like, the common denominator is you got to be able to chill out and have some patience in the woods. Like, that's really it. And so just spend time out there. And you don't have to go to fancy places. You can multitask. You can go running or walking for exercise, mm-hmm. but then also see that too. And that's kind of how I've always done it personally.
Speaking with Allie Thomas today of the Fish and Wildlife Department in Vermont. She's the education manager for the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. We did get this question from Megan in Burlington, Allie. She says, even at my bird feeder in the Old North End, tracking can be interesting with so many wing patterns and prints in the snow. I did not need to track this one at all. She says, a Cooper's hawk swooped down to capture its meal of a pigeon. I assume that they and the sharp-shinned hawks that we see come up from the intervale when food is a little more sparse in the wintertime. Is that the right assumption, she asks?
Yeah. Cooper's hawks are notorious for bird feeders because they just know that, hey, this is a really easy meal. I'm going to go eat that chickadee today. That's very common that you would see a Cooper's hawk near a bird feeder, especially in the wintertime when they should be out.
How big is a Cooper's hawk?
It's a smaller forest hawk. I don't know the exact inches, but it has shorter wings, longer tail, so it can navigate through a forest better. It's an accipiter, not a buteo, not the bigger broad-winged or red-tailed hawks. It's part of that smaller family, which is also what a sharp-shinned hawk is. Yeah.
Wow. We've got a call. George on the line from Callis. Hi, George.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. I
sure.
love VPR and love the show. I've been tracking many animals, including fisher cats, up in the hills where I am, and found some pretty big paw prints. I'm wondering if it might be a cougar or a bobcat, definitely bigger than a fisher cat, about the size of a large child's hand. At one point, appeared to be running about 5 feet apart, the prints were. Any ideas?
Yeah, that could certainly be a bobcat or a coyote. The big thing is you want to look at, when you want to decipher whether it's a feline or a canine species, is one of the fastest ways, because you don't always get a perfect print. But if you can draw, you know, 4 lines around one print, and if it's more of a square, that's likely maybe a cat family. And if it's more of a rectangle with 2 longer sides, that would probably be maybe a coyote. We do have on the Fish and Wildlife website a spot where you can put if you've seen maybe a possible mountain lion sighting or a lynx sighting, whether it be tracks or whatnot. But we request, you know, a picture with that. So you could report it if you had a picture of something. But it was likely a coyote or a bobcat walking around or running.
Thanks very much for that phone call, George. And, of course, we don't want to get into the debate about catamounts now, do we, Allie?
No, we don't.
That's not going to happen today. All right. We are talking with Allie Thomas. Give us a call at 800-639-2211 if you have some sightings or some questions about what you may have been seeing in the woods. You know, I think of most of the creatures of the wild as being nocturnal. Can you see many animals if you do winter tracking in the daylight hours?
Do you mean see the tracks or see the animals?
See the animals themselves.
That's less likely, certainly. Yeah. You know, there are species that'll walk around during the day, especially if it's a nice sunny day. I've seen that, you know, they're more willing to get up and walk around. You know, you can even find bear prints on a warm, sunny day, which seems like what shouldn't be happening in the middle of winter is to see a bear. But every once in a while, they can wake up and walk around a little bit on one of those sunny days. But certainly the best times of day would be the morning, you know, right after the night and before things get windy or ruined or whatever, melted away from the sun, especially if it was a dusting the night before. But morning is a great time to get out there and see tracks. But certainly, you know, tracks can stay for days and days, and good trackers can start to really read those tracks and tell you, oh, these are probably a couple days old or a couple hours old, or that, you know, that's a lot. There's a lot of power in that when you start to be able to tell how old a track is.
You mentioned bear tracks, and it does bring up the question, is this ever a dangerous activity to do?
I've never thought of it. I don't think so.
No.
You know, I'll follow tracks for animals, and people ask me, like, would you follow a coyote track? And, well, it just depends. I don't want to go bug a den site. I don't want to bother coyotes. But it doesn't mean that if I see a track, if I'm running on the woods, I'm not going to kind of look where it goes and see what happens. But you got to be smart about it, like anything with wildlife and outdoor recreation. But I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's far more dangerous to not be connected to your local landscape.
That's a good point. But the thing is, though, you really don't want to disturb the habitat, the activity, the nests, the things that you see. There's a responsibility there that you have too, right?
Absolutely. It's you know, you're just an observer out there. You don't want to take anything, move anything, disturb anything. You're just trying to be part of it.
Be out there to enjoy it. Yeah. What does seeing an animal track and being able to identify that animal teach you about the environment that you live in as a human being?
Absolutely. Well, I think there's a process of connecting with the local landscape when you can start to determine which species are there, whether you're in a really pristine forest or an urban area, to be able to identify those species. And I think it's so interesting when you do get into those wild places, whether it be a state forest or a wildlife management area, and you see such diversity and in the patterns between the differences among those habitat types, whether it's a meadow or an edge or the forest, you can see the difference between the species that are present. And I just think it's very obvious the importance of a diversity of wild habitats when you start to track, because there is absolutely sign of which species will or will not use certain areas and how having those habitats connected is vitally important for their survival.
Does the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department have any education classes, anything people can take or sign up or even online just to learn more?
Yeah. Sometimes we'll do in-person programs. Like last Saturday, I did a program and 60 people showed up. So that was cool. That told me people care.
You know? Yeah.
But we also have track cards that are you can print off from online that are Vermont track or animals. And we also, I know there's a backyard forestry program that's was created in partnership, not just with our department, Forest and Parks, and other departments too, that have a PowerPoint that I did that's kind of like a webinar. It's like a 20-minute Vermont tracking webinar. So that's out there too somewhere. But there certainly are always online tutorials on that topic.
What about being aware of the hunting seasons before you go out? I mean, that is something you probably want to make sure. You know, there's muzzleloader season, all that kind of stuff. You want to be careful about that, right?
Yeah. I think the woods are always a pretty safe place. You know, but certainly wear blaze orange when it's a hunting season just so you're protecting yourself and being respectful to everybody around you. And but otherwise, I just really do think the woods are a safe place. Just make some precautions, know which season is happening for your sake, and just to be respectful of those hunters who've probably scouted and really, really looked forward to that hunt all year too.
Yeah, hopefully you don't hear about too much tension between the hunting community and those folks who are just looking at tracks and stuff.
You know, to me, they're one and the same. They're all the same group most of the time. Not that everybody who tracks hunts, but some of the best trackers I know are trappers and hunters. But it doesn't mean that they're the only ones out there. And, you know, they all have a common interest, which is habitat conservation and having really healthy wildlife populations. It doesn't matter which specific activity they do. Like I said, most do all of them.
And the great thing about this is, as you said, this is the season for this. Those fresh tracks in the snow, you can get out there, you know, and you can take the time. You don't have to rush. You don't have to do anything that's, you know, like going skiing or what have you. That's a whole day activity, but you can just go at your own pace here.
Absolutely. And that's one thing I like to tell people is, like, don't get anxiety over this. Don't feel like you're not doing something right. You know, just go out there and unravel the story that the tracks are telling you. It's not about quantity. It's not like, oh, look at my list, which is cool. Like, I'll admit I like having a big list of species, but more so I want to follow a track and kind of get a little insight on what it's like to be that critter.
And we have Rich on the line from Putney. Hi, Rich.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
Thank you for taking my call. Great program, and I appreciate everything VPR does.
Oh, thank you very much. And what do you got a question for Allie today?
Yeah, I guess I have a short story and sure. wanted to get the your guests' commentary on it. It's been great tracking here. We have about an inch of powder over some crust. And last weekend, I was out in my local woods and came upon a fisher trail, which is not uncommon. But I was surprised to then encounter a second fisher trail. And they followed each other for about a half a mile. And it seemed like one was a male and a female. There was a smaller set of tracks and a bigger set of tracks. And I guess the most interesting thing I observed was that there seemed to be some belly slides that happened between the two of them and some, I don't know, rolling around in the snow, perhaps, that flattened some areas and got rid of the powder and made it look more icy. And then they would get up and walk again, and they wouldn't always stay together. They would kind of weave and braid each other's trails for about a half a mile. And I just found it fascinating. I took my sweetheart to see the tracks, and we followed them for a while. And I guess my question for the guest is what she can tell me about fisher courtship and reproduction is something I never encountered before in the woods.
That's great. Thanks for the call, Rich.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Great story.
You know, I've tracked fishers a lot, and when I track them, your story is a lot more romantic. When I track fishers, it usually ends in a kill site because they're really good hunters. But, you know, for one thing, I've only ever seen otters leave a bunch of belly slides, but it doesn't mean fishers can't do it too, and I have seen a little bit of that among fishers. Fishers, from what I understand, they're very territorial and they don't want to hang out with each other most of the year. So yeah, there's some kind of courtship happening, and they're getting ready to possibly mate. And then they do have delayed implantation, so they're not gonna have. They're very fecund. They have a lot of offspring, but they're not gonna have those offspring until the spring because they. You know, conditions aren't quite right yet. But, yeah, that could be a territorial thing. It could be a courtship. I've never seen that exactly,
so
and I don't want to speak out of – yeah.
Well, but even if it's not the mating season for them, as you're saying, you know, deep winter, it could be.
Yeah. No, I think it's more probably a territorial situation going on, but I'm not positive. I don't want to make anything up. But
this is so great, though, because it's part of that whole mystery of nature. You come upon things like that, and it creates this mystery, and you're wondering what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And it's great sparks conversation. We got this question from Alice, who writes in and says, the other day I saw several coyote tracks converge in a 4-foot circle packed with many prints. What do you think was going on?
There's a lot of questions there. You could have coyotes will congregate if there's a kill, you know, and they can feed together on that kill. If there wasn't that, they just – Vermont coyotes have some behaviors that might be different from Western coyotes in that they have a little bit more group activity than other coyotes in the country. And so they do have a little bit more of a pack behavior. They're social animals. Who knows what they were doing exactly, but they certainly congregate before they go hunt.
We have Catherine on the line from Charlotte. Hi, Catherine. Catherine, are you there?
Hi, yes.
Hi, yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had an identification question. This morning there were tracks going across my backyard, and they're singular. They're absolutely in line, the imprints into the snow. They're sort of filled in, so I can't see pad or details or claws or anything. And they're round. They're, I guess, about maybe 3 inches round. And and they went under the lowest fence rail. So it's not like a deer jumping over it, which is like 18 inches off the ground. And one curiosity I have is that something that might potentially eat my dogs.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
That's one of the good, you know, the reasons to know what's walking through your landscape. You know, oftentimes canine species like a coyote or a fox, or cat species, a bobcat, they do walk pretty much in line. It looks like they have 2 feet instead of 4 because they directly register their hind feet into their front pad, you know, where they put their front foot, their hind foot goes directly into that. So it looks like they're walking pretty much in line, and it doesn't show all 4 feet. So it's probably one of those, especially if it's 3 inches, that's too big for a fox. So it might be a coyote that walks through. I'm not positive. It's hard when you don't see it. But
are Catherine's dogs safe? This is what I want to know because I love dogs.
I don't know. How tough are your dogs? Depends on their size and everything else. But, you know, if you have a coyote walking through, it'd be worth just looking outside before you let your dogs out. I'd say that. But I don't want to make any, like, solid statements on that one. Cause,
sure. I mean, we're not there. You're piecing together things. You know,
but, you know, a 3-inch inline track, that could be a coyote. It could be a bobcat.
Thanks for the call, Catherine. We got this note from Maria, who writes, "We live on a partially wooded lot in Lincoln. Our kids and us are totally captivated by the variety of wildlife we encounter literally in our backyard. Currently, we have a young moose living on our land. Lucky. We first noticed unusual droppings in the woods. The next day, spotted the moose. A few summers ago, the same thing happened with a bear. We have endangered newts, owls, woodpeckers, tons of fireflies, and they actually have an annual firefly viewing party. Our neighbor's convinced there was a lynx living under her porch for a while." This sounds like a lot of activity out there with Maria. And thinking back, we thought perhaps we'd hear it calling in August of September of 2016. She says she's glad she's not encountered the lynx. But that's quite a variety of there. I mean, you hear about people that have this much activity, sometimes in their own backyards?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the beauty of Vermont, right? We have a pretty strong connection and access to the outdoors and more wild places, especially in Lincoln. You know, that's a pretty wild area. It's up in the mountains, and she certainly could have been seeing all of that. I don't know about the lynx necessarily, but I think that's what's special about Vermont is we often will get – it doesn't take long to find that type of diversity. You know, I have a little yard. I don't own land. And I go a half mile up the road and I can get 15 species. You know, that's really cool. And it's a thank you to the state forest that's up there and the WMA that's not too far behind that. So, you know, that state land is vitally important to connect people who may not have a bunch of a space.
WMA, I'm sorry.
Wildlife Management Area.
Thank you.
Those are important places because of those types of things. But yeah, I often will hear people say similar.
Let's go to Vicky, who's on the line from Bridport. Hi, Vicky.
Hi. I have a question about deer. I was really excited to see all the deer tracks moving around in the woods in our back of our house. And then I noticed them moving around in our yard. And then we noticed they're eating our shrubbery. Got any hints on how we can save these plants from our beautiful wildlife?
Right. Yeah, that's a trick. Some people put nets over them. Some people put kind of cones over them. It really depends on, you know, what type of shrubs they are, I guess. But this year, we've seen a lot of deer eating people's garden plants that they typically wouldn't touch. There's a lot of deer in certain places. And so the population is quite high and they're hungry. They're looking for food. I know my friend who has a big cedar stand, they're eating cedars, which is almost unheard of. So to protect your plants, I guess maybe a heavy canvas blanket or something like that. But, you know, that's a tricky one. Deer can – they're fun to see until all of a sudden they eat your garden, you know, or your plants. They're not fun anymore.
I've heard things about people that will sometimes take animal urine from other animals, spread that around to keep deer away. Does that work or is that a myth?
Yeah, I think it does work. You have to be careful what type of urine you're purchasing because there are some that are illegal to use, specifically during hunting and hunting. But you just, you know, you want to be sure you're doing – maybe go to a garden store and buy something that's legit.
Allie, this being the age of the ubiquitous cell phone, you know, and the camera function, of course, that comes with it, do you recommend looking for a kind of photo op out here, or is there just a certain kind of pleasure that's greater in, you know, just experiencing the moment, committing it to memory?
You know, I think that really depends on the person. I know some people who connect more with nature through their camera lens. And it's because of that camera they get out more often and they've seen things they never would have noticed otherwise. Personally, I never have any of it on me. But that's my own thing. That's not because I'm cooler or smarter or any of that. It's just not what I do. But it just depends on the person. And, technology and cameras can be a great way to get people or kids out who may not, be inclined to go out there and see. And then all of a sudden they have this task and this cool thing to use. So I'm not against it by any means. It just depends on who you are and what your goals are.
Yeah, I was just trying to get your own personal take on it.
Yay.
So I'm glad I got that too. And I think that, in talking to you, I get the sense that you look at this as maybe two ways. You've got this background in the environment. You're a researcher, and it's a kind of scientific study for you. But also, there are stories to be told here, right, in the things that you see.
Absolutely. I think that's why I love wildlife tracking is it's fun, it's creative, but I'm still a researcher. I can still do that scientific, angle that I love so much. It really does tap into your creativity, and it's just different type of thinking. And it's not that you can't figure out if you're wrong or right eventually, but it's more the process of getting in there and looking at it differently and asking questions and seeing if you can answer them. And that's why I, as an educator, like doing it so much is it's scientific, but it's also really creative. And it's neat when you get to combine those two with kids or adults, whatever your age group that you're working with.
Yeah. Titus is on the line with us from Montgomery. Hello, Titus. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hello. I have a question about a track that I saw the other day that I've not seen before. It was in our woods up here in Montgomery. It was a triangular furrow in the snow, about 10 inches wide, maybe 6 or 7 inches deep, and it went to a hemlock tree and disappeared. So it was something that came down from the tree or either went up to the tree, and I was wondering, would that be a porcupine, or I'm just not sure what it could be.
Yeah, thank you. Porcupine's a good guess. They're homebodies. They can hang out in a big tree like a hemlock or a white pine most of the year, come down to breed, and then hang out in that tree again if there's enough food. Also possibly a fisher. They're arboreal weasels, and they're the main predators of porcupines. So maybe it was one and then the other that was in that tree. But, that is a good guess, a porcupine. But I would also venture to guess a fisher might be going up and down that tree.
Thanks very much for the call, Titus. We have Golden on the line from Pulteney. Hi, Golden.
Hi, how's it going?
Very good, thanks.
So I am originally from Delaware. I moved up here about 2 years ago, and I was just wondering if there are any good resources that I can look up to help me start tracking for the first time.
Yeah, that's a great question. I won't say any specific book, but if you just Google wildlife tracking, they're really great books and resources to use. And what's great is there's so many to choose from. If you're a picture person or more of a description or more of a ruler person, there's a book for anybody. Certainly there are apps on phones that you can download to use for that. If you're really into more like one-on-one personal, we do programs occasionally, and I've seen a lot of programs listed throughout the nature centers in Vermont too. There always are opportunities to do this, on a one-on-one basis and in an interpersonal way, not just through books. But the kicker is you just got to get out there and do it. You just got to, take the time and study it up.
Golden, I have to ask, did you see much wildlife when you were in Delaware?
No, not at all. It's mainly highways and tall buildings down there. I'm what they call a flatlander.
It's okay. I'm a flatlander too. But now you're up here in Pulteney, so I think you've got a great opportunity to get out there and start seeing some things. Thank you very much for the call. Ali, I do wonder about, as you're going out there in the woods sometimes and you're maybe taking people out, you said you had 60 people that came to, out on an excursion with you. Do you bring any props with you, anything to, help along and educate?
Yeah. How I mentioned earlier, like as a wildlife educator, we can't guarantee seeing wildlife.
Sure.
So I try to make, if I'm even going to see a track, it was a blizzard for 2 days last week and then really cold temps. So critters weren't moving around very much. Or as much as, we weren't going to see a ton of.
Oh, they don't
tracks.
Like the super cold either.
No,
huh?
No, they don't. And so we did see some fox tracks. But what I always do is I always bring like a pack basket with me that has a variety of Vermont fur bear pelts. I also have replica skulls and scat and track samples. And so when we saw the fox track, there was no way that I could tell if it was a red or a gray. It was all like windy and it was, you know, it was 3 days old or something. You know, but I take out the pelt and I show them, okay, so let's look at our habitat and let's look at the species' fur and its skull and its scat. And so what are these adaptations that it has to survive in this habitat? And that's why I like teaching wildlife tracking. It's why I like doing it, is it's more about associating what that animal is doing with the wild habitat that they're in and understanding their adaptations, behavioral and physical, to kind of, you know, see what it is that they do to survive. And I think that's what's cool. So I like to bring those props because it kind of closes the loop on, okay, so these are the footprints or these are the chew marks, but what does its mouth look like? How did it chew like that? So I always bring props to kind of you know, support the education, but also ensure some success too.
Yeah, it sounds like almost you're going through a museum, but you're in the great outdoors, which
yeah,
is it's like the greatest museum
yeah,
of all.
Yeah, it's the most like natural way to learn. And at the end of the day, like, it was sneaky education. You know, mostly we just had fun, but oh shoot, we learned some stuff.
Hey,
too.
You taught me something.
Yeah,
that's not
yeah,
fair.
That's always my goal.
Let's go to Harry, who's on the line in Cornish, New Hampshire. Hi, Harry.
Hey, Mitch, great show. Enjoying your guest, what you guests have to say about this really interesting topic.
Thanks.
I have a question. I'm in Cornish, New Hampshire, so it's pretty rural, woods all around. But when I'm driving here, or I'm driving back to Burlington, I see like a dead bird on the side of the road. It doesn't happen very often, but and I'm hesitant to pick them up. Sometimes I want to go pick them up and I think this might be weird, but sometimes I want to freeze them and then draw them or paint them. It seems like such a waste for this beautiful being to just sit by the side of the road dead like that. And is that something that I can do, or would I be arrested for that? Or
that's a great question.
A really great question. Arrested is a strong term, but you know, you're not supposed to do that because you're not supposed to be in possession of wild birds, whether they're alive or dead, unless it's hunting season, it's a game species, and you have a license. Because how does anyone know that you didn't just kill it, for whatever purposes? So I know that sounds kind of dramatic and mean because you're just trying to paint it or something. But you're not supposed to have that bird.
It's a good question,
answer.
Though. I think Harry's an artist, and you know, he's looking at that. I like the way he's looking at that, saying, you know, it does seem like a shame. There's this beautiful thing, even in
Absolutely.
Death, you know. I do understand that. We have a question from Cynthia, who wanted to know difference between a buck or a doe deer track. Can you tell that difference?
Sometimes it's a matter of size. If you find a really big track, sometimes that's more of an indication you're looking at a buck track. So that's the biggest one, honestly. Yeah, and maybe some amazing deer tracker could tell you some tiny nuance that I don't know. But I kind of see wildlife. I've never only focused on one species like white-tailed deer. So, yeah, really big buck tracks.
Just a few seconds left here, Allie, and I have to hit you up with one last question. It's a tough one. It's like asking a band to choose their favorite song. But is there one particular animal sighting that most amazed you over the years, whether it's a track, an actual animal, a personal favorite?
Yeah, I was able to follow some bear tracks. And again, you know, you got to be safe. And it was in the spring, and it was really intense. But I saw the bear track, and I saw it kill a fawn. And that sounds really intense and really kind of gross or mean. But it just was a great reminder of, like, my role in nature and humans in general and our connection to the natural world. And we're just one little speck in this big web. And it was cool to see it. It was yeah, it reminded me that I, too, was a predator and part of it all.
Quite amazing indeed. Allie Thomas, thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been fun.